what changed was students for once felt united and felt that they weren't completely alone in our state that in our recent past hasn't been very inclusive and hasn't been the leader of social justice and civil rights issues as it previously was.
This is High Tech High Unboxed. I'm Alec Patton, and that was the voice of Waverly Zhao, co-founder of Iowa WTF. This is the second and final part of our series about Iowa WTF, a group of high school students who are taking a stand against the laws banning meaningful conversation about U.S. history, sexuality, and gender identity in Iowa schools. If you haven't listened to part one yet, don't worry. This episode will stand alone, and you can go back and listen to part one as a prequel afterwards. In both of these episodes, I talked to Waverly and another co-founder, David Lee. When we left Waverly and David at the end of the last episode, they'd just finished their first walkout in response to several bills that the state legislature had just passed limiting what teachers were allowed to talk about in school. Several schools had joined the walkout, they'd got some local press coverage. Overall, it felt like a success. And something I didn't totally understand when we recorded the first episode, at this point, Iowa WTF had a grand total of 6 members. All high school students. We started this conversation by talking about who wasn't in Iowa WTF. Were there adults involved in this?
Not really. It was mainly just high school students on a Zoom call.
Mm-hmm.
Just talking it out. Each of our schools had some type of mentor that we worked with for our individual clubs. And those were our sponsors, our teacher sponsors, etc. But in terms of the organization itself, I think one of the harder things we've had to understand how to navigate was sustainability without that kind of adult mentor, because there's not a lot of consistency. If we leave, we have to make sure that the other members that are coming into IOWTF understand how to operate it, understand what the purpose is for. And if you see in schools, oftentimes the clubs without adult mentors are the ones to go really quickly. And so that is something that IYWTF has been struggling with in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But I think not having that adult presence was kind of essential for the organization to thrive.
Yeah, I agree. I think like from the very beginning of our group, we understood that it wouldn't be the same if we did bring in adults, but then also just trying to navigate the challenges that come with being all students and like under the age of 18 at the time, and like what that meant as far as money, funding, mobilization, like trying to get students to places, etc.
Yeah, and if you look at a lot of the other like statewide organizations, like March for Our Lives is completely led by youth.
Mm-hmm.
And so Iowa QSA, which we partnered up with later, they were also completely run by youth under the age of like 24. So these organizations thrive when there is a core leadership that can get things done, but there's definitely some challenges without adult mentors helping us out.
Why was it important to not have adults around?
I think for me it was important because they already are in every level of leadership and social justice. So we need a space where youth are the center and are fully able to elevate their voices and their ideas, and not have that be like at the will of an adult. And I think that's pretty true for a lot of the other organizations that are youth led in Iowa. Like we already have so many other progressive adult led organizations, and it's sometimes difficult when you are young and in there because you're completely alone, and it can be a little bit scary to try to speak up on things when it's a room full of older people who also maybe hold a connotation about your age, like, oh, they're young and like they don't know anything. But it's like, well, I'm young, but I have things to say, like I have an experience that matters. So that's what Iowa WTF wanted to keep center.
Another thing was the perception from the outside is something we studied a little bit, because oftentimes having an adult in the organization people would think that these adults were kind of navigating what we were going to say, and they were the ones ordering us around and making decisions. And we didn't want any of that, so we tried to keep all of the adults kind of like a partnership. Once we had things going on and they wanted to contribute to our organization, but they weren't the ones making the decisions. So we could say that the youth were actually leading this.
Yeah, David brings up an ongoing problem with like a lot of the opposition in Iowa, claiming that all of the young people speaking out and organizing are just indoctrinated by adults. So it was important that we say no, like, we know what we're doing.
Have people made that accusation to you?
Of course.
Multiple times.
Where is that happening? Are people coming up to you in the street? Are they talking to you at meetings? Is it all online?
I think it's a mixture. Online is the most prevalent. There are times when at meetings, you kind of get the sense that they don't care about what you're about to say. So I was at the Capitol 2 weeks ago, and there was a bill about having educators have guns in school to protect kids from school shooters. And on that bill, there were several youth that were talking, and the presiding representative, you could see them making an effort to listen, but none of the words actually went through their ears. And so at the end, it didn't really matter what the students contributed to that meeting, right? And that kind of perception is popularized in such meetings where the adults have the power. And so I think Iowa, the WTF, was trying to get away from all of that. We were doing activism not from the inside, but also from the outside, and where our voices would be more amplified by other youth and other adults that were ready to listen. And so that's kind of what's we were trying to navigate. It happens on social media a lot. It happens in meetings, and you just kind of go along with it.
I've had experiences again on social media of people just like putting comments like, oh, here's like the far left indoctrinating kids again in our schools. It's like, where did you even get this information? But then I've also had it happen in like state legislature subcommittee meetings of people from my school district going to complain and testify in a subcommittee meeting about the work that I was doing in our school district and saying that it was because I was being indoctrinated by adult groups that were working towards anti-racism, which not only undermined everything I had been trying to do and undermined all of the youth leaders that were trying to speak out, but it also just undermined like the whole idea of like coalition building and the fact that it's so constraining to be young in these spaces. And so at some point we do have to lean a little bit on adult help and adult support, but that shouldn't mean that we're immediately indoctrinated by them and that we can't like think for ourselves and speak for ourselves and understand the things that are happening to us. And then I've also had it happen when I was the student representative on my school board. A lot of the times when I would speak out, I would immediately be shut down by some of the members on the board because they thought that I was just speaking on behalf of adults once again. And I'm like, I'm literally the student representative. I'm here to speak for students and speak about my experience in our school. And that doesn't have to be something that I can only speak on because an adult told me what to say. So it, as you can tell from how I'm talking about this, it's very frustrating, but it's something that we just have to face and work around.
Do you have any sense of who your secret far left anti-racist adult masters are supposed to be?
I do. It's groups that are also equally as outspoken and have also worked with us, and groups that we at some point or another have posted things with their like logo or something. So like it's kind of like a, oh, you associate with this group, they're indoctrinating you now.
I see what you mean. So that's kind of an effective strategy from your opposition, because
oh yeah,
you have to build coalition, but if anytime you build a coalition, people paint it as you being indoctrinated, it's harder for you to make those connections.
Exactly.
That's rough.
Yeah.
All right. that brings us nicely into the Don't Say Gay legislation. Mm-hmm. Do you remember when you first became aware of that?
I worked in the legislature that session, so I became aware of it from day one when it was introduced.
Yeah, and we learned it from Waverly. And then it went up all around the news, so.
Yes.
What was your job in the legislature?
I worked as the House Minority Leader's page, so in the Democrat office in the House.
And this was while you were a senior in high school?
Yes. So I actually basically ended my senior year a semester early and just did two online classes to remain enrolled, but worked full time in the legislature my spring semester.
What was your initial thought when you first heard about it?
Here we go again. And of course, and I can't believe they're doing this again. And just shock, but also understanding the makeup of the legislature and kind of the addition of very extreme far-right ideation within the legislature in Iowa, I kind of understood that it was impending. And after asking a little bit more questions from the people that had been in the legislature longer than me, staffers, they told me that this is just another thing that has been happening consistently. Not a lot of attention came to it before because all of these bills died immediately in subcommittee. But now with the supermajority, they're able to go onto the floor and make, I guess, more impact and be passed like HF8 was. But I'm getting ahead of myself.
That's all right. With HF8, it specifically applies to kindergarten to third grade. Mm-hmm. Was there a part of you that's well, it's maybe not that big a deal. It's not going to affect high school. It's not going to affect middle school.
At the beginning, yes. And then they rolled out the amendment that would expand it to middle school and upper elementary. And so then that was when people kind of started realizing, oh, wait. And also the bill itself was extremely ambiguous. So even in subcommittee, members of the education committee that taught kindergarten and third grade, they were if I read this book that has two moms, is that allowed? And the sponsor and bill manager would always say, read the bill and never give a direct answer. So anytime clarifying questions were asked, they were met with an equally ambiguous answer. And that just enraged people even more because it was if you're not even going to be open about what this bill does, that's quite frightening.
Yeah, and it wasn't just that bill. It was a host of other bills.
Oh, yeah.
Transgender athletes ban and not allowing trans kids to access transitioning medical procedures and medicine. There was a lot of other bills that were part of that discussion. And so we tried to share that as much as we could online.
Yeah, you had a post that went through a number of things that were all happening at once.
That's what we've seen a lot in the state legislature is they don't just try and go for one. They try to ram in as much as they can so that in the mix, at least a few will be talked about and then the other ones will go past more easily. I mean, I guess it's a strategy that has worked for Iowa. Because after those bills were introduced and in the popular discussion, there were other bills that year and the following year that were just as controversial and mm-hmm. even more damning to the public education system. And so if you look at the schools now, they have book bans in public libraries. A host of books aren't being allowed to be read in classrooms. And that's more on a local level as well as a state level. So it kind of trickles down.
Yeah, and it's obviously it's an intersectional issue because all the books that are being banned are LGBTQ+ books and BIPOC books. So it's very intentional about how strategic the people who are pushing these bills are being about the whole thing.
So Waverly, you hear about this first because you're literally there. Mm-hmm. When did you share with Iowa WTF that this was happening?
I think I was texting multiple people, all the students that I knew, oh my gosh, this is happening, or I can't believe this is happening, or here we go again, here are these bills. But it was actually our Gemma, who was in Iowa WTF and is in Iowa QSA, or Queer Student Alliance. She was the one that suggested that we do another round of walkouts together with IOQSA and IOWTF. And she asked for my help with it. And I was like, of course, like, that sounds awesome.
What's the first step if you're planning statewide school walkouts?
The first step is writing a press release and somehow generating social media and just like general media awareness about it. So while I was in the state legislature, I would like hide in my office, not in my personal office, but in my like desk in my office. And I would just be like typing emails. And like, I was just delegated with the task of getting news outlets to the specific schools that had signed up to walk out. So it was a lot of announcing that Iowa WTF wants to do statewide walkouts. And then a lot of getting a list of the schools and getting a list of the student leaders that are going to be leading them, and then putting them in contact with the media outlets that reached out to us from our press release that we did, and making sure that the local news outlets were going to those schools, and then roping in other student leaders to take interviews before the walkouts even happened. So like a lot of phone calls, a lot of emails, a lot of running around and like trying to meet with my school principal as well to make sure that it was okay to do the walkout and like there were safety measures. And since we had one walkout under our belt already, I had an understanding of what we needed to do instead. So I requested that there were more administrators and more adult bodies present when we did walk out because of the counter protests that happened last time and like the racism and like homophobia that was projected by other students last time. So, I mean, that was kind of the starting phase of it.
I want to clarify something. So when you say making sure it was okay with the principal to do a school walkout, like a school walkout's kind of by definition not okay, right? Like it's against the rules.
It's not necessarily against the rules. We have constitutional rights. This was actually Tinker v. Des Moines.
Okay, quick refresher on U.S. history. Tinker v. Des Moines was a case that came before the U.S. Supreme Court in 1969. The issue is that public schools in Des Moines, Iowa, had suspended high school students for wearing black armbands to protest the Vietnam War. The Supreme Court ruled in favor of the students. The ruling specifically declares that if school administrators are going to punish someone for protesting, they, quote, must be able to show that their action was caused by something more than a mere desire to avoid the discomfort and unpleasantness that always accompany an unpopular viewpoint. Specifically, they needed to be able to demonstrate that the conduct of the students would materially and substantially interfere with the requirements of appropriate discipline in the operation of the school. Let's get back to David.
So that kind of ensured to us and to every public school across America that we had rights to protest as long as it didn't like create a disturbance in the classroom. And by definition, just walking out and not yelling or not making a scene in a classroom counts as not disrupting the classroom. And so that's why walkouts have been a prominent type of protest in public schools. And so like it is within our constitutional rights to do walkouts and to do protests that wouldn't disturb a classroom.
Okay. First of all, shout out Tinker versus Des Moines. That hadn't occurred to me that you have that lineage.
Yeah, right in Iowa.
But they were wearing armbands, and there is a distinction between putting on an armband and going to class and walking out of class. Like, if you skip class in a non-political context, the Constitution isn't there to help you.
Oh, yeah. The students, a lot of the times, know that that's going to happen, and you're likely going to get marked absent because that's the standard procedure if you're leaving a classroom for any undisclosed reason beforehand. That's according to whatever school guidelines that they have. And so a lot of the students get marked absent, and we make sure that that is aware in our protesting student body. And we sometimes talk to the administration, and the administration helps us out in that area where they won't mark the students absent, or they can talk to us about what time it's going to happen. Maybe it's towards the end of school, so that if it's like a flex period where students have the freedom to like do elective type of little meetings at the end of school, then that's when it takes place. And that's what happened in Ames a lot of the times, is we were able to work with the administration and guarantee the safety, but also work out some differences that we may have had in terms of what the students might be getting as blowback. And you're right, like Tinker v Des Moines and armbands is definitely not the same thing as walking out of a classroom. But essentially, the ideas of that case was that if you are protesting and it doesn't harm anybody else in your vicinity, and it doesn't cause a disruption in the learning environment, it's not going to be against you. And they can't really legally do anything that can prevent you from walking out. And so that's why these walkouts happen not in the school building, but outside, right? They don't want to cause a scene in the school because that is very disrupting. If we walk out, then that's a different environment.
Yeah, there's also a lot of rules about press on school campuses. So like having leaders understand too that if you do have media come, you need to make sure that they are abiding by your school rules to limit the potential of you getting in trouble, and just like just general, we're breaking rules, but abiding by the ones that we do still have to follow.
So it sounds like Ames was pretty open to working with you. Were there schools where they just came down really hard on the kids?
In our past walkout, we knew that a private school, one of our founding members had a lot of issues with them. And obviously because it's a private school, the parameters were different. But they didn't walk out again for the We Say Gay walkouts. But I think it was more that a lot of the other schools that were involved this time around were from a lot more rural parts. Like this expanded beyond just central Iowa this time. Like the numbers of students who walked out was as few as like 10 to like hundreds. And so I honestly don't know exactly what the pushback at each school was, but I do know that students kind of chose not to care if there was and continued with it anyways.
When did you start to have the sense of like, oh, this is getting big?
When I got my call from a national news outlet that said that they heard about this story and wanted to cover it.
Yeah, and Waverly and Gemma were like really proactive in trying to get the attention of other public schools and media outlets beforehand, and making sure that people were aware about it beforehand, because that's always some little bit of a frustration for people organizing walkouts, is that like nobody cares about it until after it happens. But we were planning ahead and they were making sure that people knew about it beforehand.
How did you know how to do that?
I didn't, honestly. It was very trial and error. It was kind of like, okay, how do I reach news outlets? Press release. And just like scrapping together as many news contacts that I had received over the years. And just like mass sending out emails, texts, and just hoping for the best. It also was something that the media had already paid attention to. So when they got the word that students were upset about it and they were going to walk out across the state, that is headline news. So of course they're going to want to cover that. And it was kind of a messy process and very stressful process, I will say, because I had never done anything like that before in that intense degree.
So do you have any pro tips for other kids based on your experience?
Give someone on the contact that will be available. Like, I was in that position because I was not in school, so like I had access to my phone. Also saving all of the people who have covered like stories for you before, interviewed you in the past, like that is how I get a lot of the news coverage, is just by sending it to people that have interviewed me or other students in the past. And then also trying to get as many of the students at each school, like their contact info, because sometimes like when I would be ask like, oh, what schools in Eastern Iowa are walking out? I'd be like, let me get back to you on that, and like be scrambling to find those students and figure out who was. So just like having like that, a list of contacts, and just like trying to remain organized using like a spreadsheet or something helps.
It's very much like you try it and you fail and you learn from like your errors, and then you just figure out how to do it better.
And Waverly, did the House Minority Leader know what you were doing while this was going on?
So I informed her that I would be missing work or leaving work early on the day my school was walking out. And she kind of asked why. And I said, I'm leading a walkout at my school. And she said, perfect. Like, that's totally fine.
And leading up to the walkouts, I'm thinking about if you're at a school where you're one of 10 people who are going to do this, were they worried about their safety? What was going on with the other students? Was that a concern?
I think it definitely was. if I'm being completely honest, the organization of like student to student conversation, like student organizer to student organizer conversation, wasn't as organized as getting press there. So it was very much us relying on their own like local effort of organizing and just like doing it at the same time as all of us.
We were concerned about it a little bit. And so like the day before, I think I made a video just to talk to all of the organizers and tell them that like whatever happens in their walkouts, what matters is that you were there and that you were protesting because of what you believed, right? And it didn't matter if there was like two people or like 20 people or like 250. It matters that you were part of a bigger effort to try and get your voices heard on the statewide stage. And I think that's also like the beauty of IOWTF is that all of these organizations and all of these clubs and all of the different people walking out at each individual school weren't working directly for IOWTF, and we were like giving them instructions what to do. It was just a mass effort in order to build some type of unity, some type of coalition between all of these schools and make sure that they felt they were being part of something bigger than just the few people that might have walked out from their school. And that kind of individuality is what IOWTF values. And it functions off of the fact that these local organizations are thriving relatively on their own, and we're just able to connect them with other local organizations throughout the state.
Yeah, it goes back to the coalition building thing that we've been trying to do. Like on the day of the walkouts, there were more schools that walked out than I had ever been informed of, because they saw that this was happening and chose to do it on their own, which is extremely brave in and of itself. But it also just goes to show like the broader implications of our organization. We want to make sure that students aren't constrained by like having to go through like the organization oriented process. Like if you want to do a walkout and have it be with the We Say Gay walkouts, like of course, like we're gonna allow that. We're not gonna stop you, and we are happy that it reached people we didn't even realize.
That's interesting to me, because you were so disciplined about, we get media, we talk to the principal first, we make sure that we're not disruptive in class. But like, I don't know, did you have anybody who just like went off, like they didn't plan it, they shouted in the classroom? Because that seems like a real liability to you all, to have somebody who just decides, oh yeah, we're part of this, and they don't do the disciplined work that you did.
If they did do that, it didn't make any headlines, and it didn't make the same impact as the overarching, all of the other schools that chose to walk out. So I guess like, yeah, that was something that we maybe had to consider, and at the time we were worried about. But I wouldn't sell ourselves short as students in understanding like the full implications of like what was happening at that time. Overall, I think all of the LGBTQ plus students that were impacted by this legislation mostly just wanted community at this time, and they already had targets on their backs. So I think they understood in a way that this was a lot about just finding that community and saying that you don't support this with the help of the rest of the students in your state and in your school that feel the same way. So I guess I don't know anyone who maybe took a more anger-filled, like completely like F the institution route.
So tell me about that day for you. Like you wake up on March 1st. How are you feeling?
Very excited and very stressed, because I had to go into work that morning and then sit through, do like my like office tasks, whatever. And then—
Wait, really? Why didn't you just take the whole day off?
Because I'm a working woman, and I didn't want to completely screw up my routine. I'm a very routine-based person. So I needed to go to work. I needed to go through the motions of a normal day to help settle my nerves a little bit. Then I left work, went home, changed, like brought my megaphone, brought all the posters that we made the night before, and then went to the school, and my walkout went wonderfully. But it definitely, like the whole day was like, will this actually work? Will people actually come? I don't know how many people are going to participate. And I guess for me, it didn't help that I hadn't actually been in school for that semester. So it was hard to gauge the feelings of the student body other than like what I knew from the clubs I was still a part of and like the people who were already tuned into this stuff.
So Waverly, I'm guessing you didn't just go into a classroom to walk out.
No, I was already outside. I didn't actually walk out of the school. I was just standing out in the spot that we had dedicated for the walkout and kind of guiding students out there and passing out posters and stickers and pride flags. Oh, that's also like adults stepped in and supported us by donating a bunch of pride flags, and we were able to distribute them to a lot of different schools throughout the central Iowa area. So that was amazing. I should also mention too that I did work with the Des Moines schools because they were, you know, near the Capitol. They wanted to march into it. So they all met up and marched into the Capitol. Like, I left the Capitol to go to my walkout in the suburbs, and then like seeing and like getting all the news coverage and videos from the organizers and like media outlets of all of these students in the Capitol was like equally as like awesome and cool as all of the other walkouts that happened across the state. Yeah.
So by the time you were at your school, you kind of knew it was happening.
Oh yeah. By the time ours happened, I already saw the Des Moines schools organizing. And so like at the end of the day, it was kind of like, at least there's this happening.
And you have to remember that from the start of the press release, it happened in the course of like 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And everything was going such a fast pace. I wasn't even like initially trying to organize a walkout. And
wait, David, why not?
Because I didn't know as much as Waverly and Gemma on the issues. And so I wanted to like learn about what we exactly were protesting about and make sure the student body understood. And the last time we had been organizing, we did a walkout with the preparation of a month, right? And we met with the students, talked about the issues, got educated about the specific bills, made preparations for what the route would be like, what the events would be, and like making posters and everything. And so beforehand, I had thought that you need like at least a month to do a walkout, right? And in 2 weeks, I didn't think that was going to be enough time. But as it turns out, it doesn't really matter how much time you have when the issues are important to the students. And so the students had in Ames actually had been like discussing on their own, trying to walk out and how that might look like and planning it. And so like 4 days before the actual walkout happened in Ames, somebody told me that like they were really wanting to do a serious walkout. And so I jumped on board with whatever plan they had. I connected them to the administration and we were talking about what would look like for safety and like students, adults chaperoning the students during the event and how to make sure that like the students were actually safe. And so like these events were happening on their own without even the slightest suggestion from the leaders, right? We just sent out a press release 2 weeks mm-hmm. and then everything just started going. And it wasn't really within our control, every aspect of it. And that's the parts that really inspired me, because these students were going out on their own without my help and without like IOWTF's central help, just because they saw that other students in the state were doing it and they didn't want to be left out in this discussion.
Yeah, and it also expanded past just high school students. Middle school students walked out in my school district and other school districts, and college students on all of our like major college campuses.
And some of my friends that were older from the year past, they were at like University of Iowa and Iowa State, and they were like texting me what was happening and the protests that were happening on campus. And that was really cool to see. And I was really proud of everybody that participated.
I came into work the following day and I was not allowed ever into the Democratic caucus because I'm not a member, but I got a text from my boss saying, come down to the caucus room. And I was like, oh, what's this about? Because normally I just bring copies down there of bills. So I went down and I was just given a round of applause by the Democratic Caucus for organizing, and they extended their gratitude to all of the students that were involved. And it was just so rewarding to see adults that I like highly respected pay that respect back, and also just like understand the effort and work that I put in those 2 weeks leading up. So that was really cool.
That's awesome. What do you think changed as a result of the walkouts?
I think what changed was, and because I was told this by my employer, what changed was they finally were able to see that what they were saying and what they were advocating for in the House chamber, in the Senate chamber, was aligning with what people actually wanted. It felt very rewarding for our elected officials to see students organizing that way and saying like enough is enough, because all of these students were there, like in this Capitol building across the state, in a lot of the districts that had elected officials who were supporting this legislation. They were openly saying like, we don't want this. And so it was very clear to all of them that like, they were going down the right path and that this effort was necessary because of all the students that it impacted and all of the students that felt like this was such a large enough issue to leave school, to organize, to come to the Capitol and scream at their legislators to see them and to hear them and to respect their identities and allow them to exist in their state. And I think it overall, like what changed was students for once felt united and felt that they weren't completely alone in our state that in our recent past hasn't been very inclusive and hasn't been the leader of social justice and civil rights issues as it previously was.
Yeah, the most important thing was I believe the students felt comfortable like speaking out for their beliefs, even if they were the minority in their districts. And so seeing districts with like five people walking out and having the courage to walk out and making sure that they had some type of voice in the state of Iowa where the legislation was trying to constantly silence them. And so being comfortable with what you actually believed in was something that the students learned from that walkout. And right after, like, we saw a bunch of other like events happening because of that momentum. And Waverly, Gemma, and I attended like a Capitol rally that following Friday. And that was primarily led by adults, but there were a lot of young students milling in the crowd because they had been talking and they had been protesting about those issues like that week. And that connection with the legislators, like,
yeah,
when I go to the Capitol and talk to some of my legislator friends, they're always saying there's always lobbyists. There are always like these adult organizations that are like that have an agenda that they don't even believe what they're saying because they're being paid to do it, because that's what lobbyists are for, right? And so having youth joining that discussion and being comfortable to say what their perspective is on a bill was so incredible for them, because that was something that not a lot of people did before in the past. And now, like, every time I go to the Capitol, there's like subcommittee meetings happening, and there's always like students for the issues that matter to like the public education system. And that to me has been really a proud moment when I get to hear those students talking. And it's not a result of Iowa WTF's like efforts. It's a culmination of things. But we were contributing to a environment that lets youth talk about what they believed.
Yeah, it totally like let youth finally into these spaces that have been run by adults, despite the fact that a lot of the legislation being passed impacts youth and students the most. So I think that was definitely like a more tangible thing that happened, was finally there is a move by leaders and adults in power to include students and include young people in these conversations.
All right, I got one final question for you. So most of our listeners are educators, particularly teachers. What is your message for teachers?
I mean, my message to teachers is that, firstly, I would like to thank all the teachers that supported me and my efforts when they were limited because of their job and role in our school district into what they could say and how much support they could give. But I think the teachers that want to sit down and have conversations and understand students and like what was happening, like those teachers are the ones that definitely stood out to me and I keep in my mind. And so like we understand as student organizers that maybe you can't participate in a walkout, but you're very much a part of this conversation too. And there are small things you can do, like just, you know, behind closed doors, hey, congrats on that walkout, or I've seen what you've been doing and thank you so much. Like, that's awesome. Like, those things really help. We understand, like, your job is important and we would much rather have you in our school day to day and, like, see you than get fired because you attended a walkout.
Yeah. I think on behalf of a lot of students, I would like to say just, like, thank you for being in those classrooms and making sure that we feel welcomed, because that's really where all of these desires to do a walkout and to protest for what we believe and make sure our education system is not prohibiting the histories of a lot of the minority students. That starts in the classroom. That kind of environment is created by teachers. And whether you are like a literacy teacher or a math teacher or an AP Gov teacher, right? Making sure that students feel safe on an individual level and comfortable engaging with the teachers and building meaningful, purposeful relationships that are going to help them throughout their lifetime. And they're going to be looking back at it and saying, I really miss that teacher from middle school or high school. Like, that's where all of these efforts start, right? Mm-hmm. It's because adults who care about us, who teach us how to have empathy, and who teach us like our stories are important. That is the foundation for where we have the courage to go out and talk about these issues and to make sure that we are educating our fellow peers and making sure everyone in the public education system feels like they belong. And so thank you. And I hope that you are able to keep on chugging along and creating those safe spaces and having those conversations, even if it's not directly saying your history can be taught in this specific class, but we can talk about it afterwards. And I can teach you or talk to you about this thing that matters to me. And we can talk about your story that matters to you and those kind of efforts, whether it is behind closed doors or not. That is where like true learning and true education and true personal growth of a student happens.
Thank you both so much. It's amazing what you all are doing. I'm sorry that you've had to do it.
Thank you for giving us a chance to talk.
High Tech High Unboxed is hosted and edited by me, Alec Patton. Our theme music is by Brother Herschel. Huge thanks to Waverly Zhao and David Lee for this conversation. In our show notes, we've got a link to the video that David recorded for organizers on the eve of the We Say Gay walkout, as well as some of the press coverage of the walkout. Thanks for listening.